It's Zombie Takeout, Nick. You've got Zombie Takeout. What's up? Welcome to episode 218 of Zombie Takeout. The B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got a little bit of news. This is a kind of a good news, bad news thing. From Deadline, Screen Gems buys Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, adds Game of Thrones stars. Screen Gems has closed the deal for the U.S. distribution rights for Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and Game of Thrones, Charles Dance, and Lena Headey have joined the cast. That's Tywin and Cersei, for those who don't know the actors' names.
Right.
The film stars Lily James, Sam Riley, Bella Heathcote, Jack Huston, Douglas Booth, Matt Smith, I haven't heard his name associated with it until now.
Wow.
And Suki Waterhouse. Now, last month we had a story saying that David O. Russell was writing the screenplay. Turns out that he's left the project due to a disagreement over the budget. Now the director is writing the screenplay.
I think... What an opportunity we missed out on there. I've gone back to not being interested. Although, you know, hearing Matt Smith involved.
Matt Smith, Lena Headey, and Charles Dance, yeah. Although they say Charles Dance of Game of Thrones, if you're up on the show, you know that's maybe slightly inaccurate.
You can just assume they've all died.
So I'm still interested, but because of those three actors. And maybe they've kept some of Russell's work.
They need to just combine that and Pride and Prejudice, the Bollywood film, and just really make a go at it and just really
Zombies
genre blend. Yep.
Yeah, definitely. All right, on to this week's movie, which is from 1991, Ricochet. And of course, the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Convoluted Plot Points. Bet you can't write just one.
And also brought to you by Scott Evil, for when you have your opponent right in the palm of your hand. You could just go get a gun and shoot him.
You've got a gun in your room. You can go get it. We'll shoot him together. It'll be a bonding experience.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? But no, that does not happen here.
Not at all.
Oh, boy. Anyway. But yeah, you could honestly say, picture the James Bond movie where he gets captured by the villain and he... The villain is about to, he comes up with some convoluted way to get rid of James Bond rather than just killing him. And then somehow James Bond gets away. That's really only a scene of a James Bond movie. They managed to stretch that into an entire film here.
Well, take that plot point and turn it into a recursion that just keeps happening over and over and over again.
And it's like a Beavis and Butthead episode where they just never get the lesson. But okay, so the plot, though, we have a young police officer. I'd never realized that. Made the connection of it taking place in another time, but then I realized, it's an epic. It goes over a scope of about 7 years.
I think there's a 7 year gap.
Yeah, it begins in '83. Is a young cop. He foils a some sort of double criminal activity going on at the same time in front of a nice 1983 video camera that makes the evening news, makes a star out of the guy. He sends the guy to jail, and the person rots in jail, does the whole Cape Fear thing where he's obsessed with getting revenge, and he gets out and he says, "Fuck you, Mr. Clown."
Pretty much.
That's another inside.
I think we've explained that joke.
I'm sure people are familiar with that joke. But this was Fuck You, Mr. Clown, the movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, he gets out of jail. He has his elaborate plot to for revenge. Everything goes according to plan, of course.
Mm-hmm.
He and pretty much takes him down. But rather than leaving the country and starting a life of his own, he has to see, lick the salt from his tears, I guess, like Cartman and and I can't remember the kid's name that,
Yeah. Oh.
made his, eat his parents.
Yeah. Scott something or other.
Yeah, Scott Tenenbaum or something like
That's
that.
it.
So he gets mad that when he thinks he's going to kill himself, and hilarity ensues.
Now that you mention Cartman, I think his character is very much based on Lithgow's in this movie.
Maybe.
Now, just starting with the opening titles, very, very 80s. Possibly because it was set in 83, maybe because it was 91 and we weren't quite over that whole thing just yet.
Well, culturally, the country was still very much in the 80s and 91. I mean, it wasn't until 92 where we started breaking away from the 80s, where there are people, that was pretty lame. We need to move on. But really, didn't they seem a bit familiar to you, the opening credits?
Yeah, but I can't place why. I was thinking maybe Miami Vice.
It is almost, for my eye, it's pretty much a complete recreation of the Psycho introduction.
Oh.
The music is very
Yes,
similar.
now that you mention it.
The special effects are even similar, despite them being,
Yeah.
40 years apart or
Yeah.
something like that, or 30 something years apart, except that it was in color instead of Psycho's black and white. So I'm sitting there just like, oh boy. This is going to be just as bad as I remembered
Ha.
it.
And was it?
Surprisingly, no.
We should explain. We saw this in 91 in the theater with a group of people. Actually,
Yeah.
it must have been like just after we met, because it was October of 91.
Yes, I think we skipped some class, of course, which, I mean,
Or it was probably after dessert theater rehearsal.
no, it was, I remember being during the day. I think
Was
we
it?
skipped a class.
Okay.
I think it maybe it could have been Bosley's. Who knows?
And just about everyone else who saw it hated it, yourself included.
Yes, this has been on my list of worst movies for over 2 decades now.
I thought it was okay. I mean, I didn't hate it, didn't particularly like it. It was, enjoyable enough. Your opinion has gone up a little.
Well, yeah, from this viewing, I would say so. I
My
mean,
opinion's gone down slightly, which is interesting. Because I thought it was very meh.
well, seriously, it had nowhere to go but up.
Yeah.
I mean,
So
it
maybe
was like a
we're
set.
agreeing that it's meh. I went down a little, you went up a little.
Right. I no longer want to kill Mulcahy for this. Highlander 2, on the other hand,
Well,
I
yeah.
don't know.
Now, probably the most annoying part of this movie for me, the stunt casting of Kevin Pollak, who was only there to do his impressions.
Yeah.
And I like Kevin Pollak well enough, but in this movie, it's clear that he's there to do two impressions and he's out.
That was an annoying part. I still would say it was the most annoying part of the film. There were many annoying parts to the
Of
film.
course. Particularly after he busts Blake, Lithgow's character, the first time. And it involves him stripping down to show that he doesn't have a weapon on and then pulling a gun out of his jock strap.
And what was the deal with them showing off Denzel Washington's body?
I don't know.
Like, I saw the trivia that he had to work out for this film, but I mean, there were just so many, it was gratuitous. And I
Yeah,
was
two
offended.
particular scenes. That one
Well, maybe not.
and another locker room scene that we shan't talk about.
Maybe not offended, but maybe just kind of like, come
It seemed a bit
on.
excessive.
Yes.
But after the first bust, he says, quote, "A Beretta in the butt beats a butterfly in the boot," because he had a gun in the back of his jock strap. Okay, I don't know much about guns. I'm reasonably sure that Beretta's not going to fit there. They're fairly, average size handguns.
Well, it depends how much you worked out that. Well, maybe
And
not.
there was a very nice shot of the knife, and it was clearly just your, classic switchblade with the S-shaped guard, not a butterfly knife. So that one annoyed me a little bit.
I think the size of the gun fit though, where he had it. Like he had the pocket. They showed the pocket that he kept it in.
Yeah.
I could see it fitting in that.
Beretta? Okay.
It wasn't a large gun that he
Well,
was.
no, I could see a gun fitting, a little, small zip gun, Derringer kind of thing.
Yeah.
Also, this is a rare case of Lithgow overacting.
Yeah.
And not in a fun Jeffrey Combs kind of way. He really can't play a tough guy.
It seemed kind of weird having him play the, the Kurgan, you know?
Yeah, very much, yeah.
It really didn't make any sense. Like, him beating up Jesse Ventura and stuff in the first, the first scene he's in prison. I guess it was kind of like, what's his name, going up against the Kurgan in Highlander. It just, I mean, Lambert. You couldn't see the two of them physically matching each other in any such sense of the imagination.
Except they're Highlanders, they have, supernatural abilities. These are two normal guys.
That's the entire problem with this film, is that he took dialogue and schemes and combat from a fantasy world.
An entire fight scene that was almost shot for shot from Highlander. They had swords in a prison.
Right, and
Makeshift
why?
swords, of course, and armor made out of phone books. I don't know where they got the phone books. Yeah.
Why? Why would you feel the need to pander that badly, you know?
Because it's Mulcahy. He does cheesy overdramatic.
But it's not even over dramatic. It's just sheer pandering. It's like,
Well, yeah.
this movie, my last movie 5 years ago, had a fan base, and I'm going to put as many elements into a cop, thriller, drama, suspense movie from that. They even use the holy ground thing.
Yeah.
When he's talking to Ice-T about not selling drugs by the youth
It was
center.
holy ground. I didn't think of it as pandering at the time, but it definitely made me think of Highlander.
It definitely was. I mean, you kind of have, Lambert's relationship with other, Highlanders, and, Odessa was clearly like another Highlander, kind of. You could even say Jesse Ventura was another Highlander himself that the Kurgan would have had to have offed. And then the whole thing on the towers with the electricity, which served no purpose whatsoever then to evoke the Highlander quickening.
Wow, yeah, I didn't think about that. You're right.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It just, you know what? When I first saw this, I didn't
Yeah.
realize it was directed by the same dude that did Highlander.
Okay, I thought maybe that was part of the reason we went to see it, because it was the director of Highlander.
Lithgow. Or
That's,
Lithgow, I should say.
yeah, you're right. Now, I will say that I happily found out that Mulcahy's career has been reduced to where it belongs in subsequent years. He's recently directed one of the Resident Evil movies. He did a straight-to-video Scorpion King sequel, and most recently worked on the Teen Wolf TV series.
Yeah, he definitely deserved a stint in movie purgatory after doing this one.
And just his whole style. It was great for videos back in the day. It just never fit movies for me. Also, Lindsay Wagner's character, he was effectively the chief of police, it seems like.
Yeah,
Or
or
the
she was the
DA.
DA, I think
DA,
she
you're
was.
right, you're right. She made a comment in that regrettable locker room scene about him not getting back into his uniform. And it
Yeah.
was a definite innuendo, and it really shows how much times have changed.
Of course.
Because it's another case of you would never get away with that shit today.
I think back then the gag was that, ooh, it's a woman telling this to a
Yeah,
guy
it was
kind
a
of thing.
flip on the stereotype, but still,
Yeah.
there would be issues today. Now, I will say, with a better director and some slight casting changes, this could be a decent movie.
The script is really like the first thing that needed to be.
There definitely needs to be a massive rewrite. But we'll get to this in sequels and remakes. I just think it
Okay.
has the potential to be a decent movie.
See, because I think one of the problems with the overall film is another huge problem is that Denzel Washington's character is too good. And that works in a fantasy world when you've got the guy that is pure good against the guy that is pure evil. But when you're trying to put this into the real world and you're trying to do this epic, tale of vengeance in an urban setting, it probably would have been much more interesting if, say, Lithgow's character was innocent.
Oh, wow.
Wrong place at the wrong time and got sent to jail by this guy who made a career off of it.
That would have been good, yes. Again, we'll get to that in sequels and remakes.
And there's just a lot of things that did not make sense in this movie. One of my proposed titles was the Houses of the Plot Holy.
Ha ha.
And say you're a dude who you're killing yourself because you're racked with guilt because, well, you like children and you're about to open a youth center. Do
And
you
then by
really?
like children, you mean like children?
Yes. Do you really do that in drag?
No.
He's feeling the shame and embarrassment. That's what the story was they were trying to pass off. Nobody says, wait a minute, he wrote the suicide note. He's full of shame and everything. And he wasn't wearing that when he left the telethon, but suddenly he did that.
To explain, Washington's right-hand man was murdered and framed by Blake to make him look like a pedophile and to cast aspersions on Washington's character.
And why would he have written that letter?
Good point, yeah.
Oh, you're going to make me write my suicide note, which means you're definitely going to kill me anyway. Oh, sure, I'll screw my friend over too.
That is a very good point.
Who writes that?
Yeah,
And
yeah.
how would it not show distress if he was tortured into writing it? Like the revenge plot just had so many holes in it, and relied upon so much going so freakily right that it was nothing shy of Wile E. Coyote.
Okay, bit of an logical issue on a smaller scale.
Okay.
When he goes to the crack house to try to convince Odessa, Ice-T's character, to help him.
To go to help him. Okay, yeah, that seems all right.
When he has the grenade.
Oh, no, wait a minute. You are talking about the same scene. That whole thing was ridiculous too. Like,
Well, that's
what?
when he talks him into helping him out.
I thought that was to stay away from the to stay away from it because it's holy ground. I thought that was that scene.
Well, he says that as well, but he walks out and he says, yeah, he agreed to it.
Yes.
So I kind of figured that was when he came up with that plan. Either way, they pull the guns on him, say, we're not going to do what you tell us to do. He pulls out a grenade and basically threatens to blow the place up if they don't do what he says. And he walks out with the grenade. Now, wasn't it obvious that it was a fake?
Of course. But that whole scene was just ridiculous anyway. Could you imagine, like, even though they knew each other from their past lives, if an assistant DA goes into
The crack house.
the drug lord's den
Right.
and tells him not to sell drugs in a certain place, like, what in what world does that would somebody even think of doing that?
That would be political suicide.
Right. Well, yeah, what good could come from it? He either gets caught in a crack den, or he gets killed in a crack den.
Right.
Or he, talks to them and somehow manages to escape with his life, and they ignore him anyway.
Also, didn't it seem like the bookmobile blew up before they were done pushing it over the cliff?
Oh yeah, totally. I don't know if that was an accident. Or if I forget what they had done to try to blow it up. They'd done something with the gas
Yeah.
tank, and I don't know
And
how
they
long
pushed
that
it over the
lasted.
cliff while, a fuse was of some sort was burning, and it seemed like they weren't done pushing it when it blew.
Right.
Also, when Blake is masquerading as the homeless guy, why was he doing that?
I didn't get that point either.
Styles, Washington's character, is walking from the courthouse to his office, presumably, and this homeless person comes up to them, and one guy, the right-hand man who was framed and murdered, tells him to fuck off, and then he approaches Washington and he gives him $1. And then he very archly turns to the camera, pulls his mask off, and reveals that it's Blake.
Right, like we couldn't have figured out that he's still alive.
We knew. We saw him blow up the van not
Exactly.
long before then.
It is that problem of when the filmmaker thinks you're an idiot.
Yeah, also the funniest one. One of the most bizarrely humorous things I've seen in a movie in quite some time.
Yeah.
The impromptu birthday party with the guy from the power company.
Oh.
He cuts the power to Sykes' house and shows up, when the babysitter's there with his two little girls.
That was definitely the best part of the whole film, actually.
And apparently, the babysitter didn't think it was weird that the guy from the power company wants to have this little birthday party with these two girls.
That whole sequence is probably the only part of this film you need to see.
Yeah.
It's Lithgow at his best in it, I think.
Yeah.
It's creepy as hell, and you really don't know exactly how far he's going to take it at this point.
Well, that's true, but that's just the logical issue of why would the babysitter think this was perfectly normal?
Oh, I think clearly the babysitter was an idiot.
Oh, fair enough, fair enough. Oh, and one more minor thing. When he had to teach Washington, or sorry, Styles, how to arm wrestle.
I didn't get that. Well, I think it was he wasn't playing along with it at first.
Maybe it was a facetious explanation and, it wasn't really necessary, but it just seemed like.
Odd. Lithgow had to goad him into playing along to arm wrestle, which, I mean, didn't really make much sense either. Like that whole thing. If you wanted to drug him up, did you really need to do it while he was awake?
Oh, a little bit of trivia. The movie had a modest box office. It premiered 5 weeks prior to the premiere of Cape Fear, a film starring Robert De Niro and Nick Nolte with a very similar storyline.
Very true.
In Australia, for the film's theatrical run, newspaper ads declared that Ricochet passed the terror test that Cape Fear flunked. Now, if you're particularly, terrified by overacting and unnecessary allusions to older movies and just general cheesiness, yes, then maybe it out-terrored Cape Fear.
You know, it's been a while since I've seen that version of Cape Fear, but I remember a lot of people being disappointed
Really,
in that too.
I heard very good things about it. I've only seen it once quite some time ago. I liked it. Certainly better than this.
Well, I think a lot of people are comparing that to the original
Oh,
Cape
yeah,
Fear.
true, which I never saw.
I have seen that too, and it was, yeah, I think it was better.
Well, you can't really compare it to the original. Me being the literalist when it comes to adaptations.
I think, you know, De Niro was a bit over the top, but anyway, not compared to this, of
Oh,
course.
no.
De Niro is damn subtle, I think, compared to this.
Oh, also, the second half of Fars, a Hindi language movie, I'm probably mispronouncing the name, is a scene-for-scene copy of Ricochet.
No
The
way.
second half of the movie is Ricochet. Exactly.
Wow.
I so want to see that movie now.
I do too. I wonder if it's better than this.
Oh, one minor little point. Again, it's just something that irritated me because it was an obvious excuse for an impression. When they're talking about Star Trek and Pollock
Right.
says
I just saw this episode
it was on
the
last
other night.
night in '83.
It's like the show was off the air for how many years at that point, dude? I think we've seen it.
We were a year or two off from Next Gen at that point, I think.
A couple of years, probably. But, I mean, yeah, he's acting like it was just on TV
He said it
that
was
night in
on
83.
last night.
Right.
It was just a bald-faced excuse for Pollock's, famous Shatner impression. All right, I'm done with my notes.
I have to.
On to sequels and remakes. Like I said, I think this, with a complete rewrite and a better director and a better cast, could be a good movie.
So what you're saying, we're going to lose the script,
Well, the
the
script, yes.
director, and
Keep the
the
basic
cast.
plot. Keep the basic plot. Give it to Nolan.
So we're gonna take out everything except for
Well,
the basic plot.
basic plot, the basic arc, because, keep the convolutions if they could be done well. Nolan directing, Chiwetel Ejiofor as Styles, Washington's character. He was the operative in Firefly or Serenity,
Okay.
also in 2012, and DiCaprio as Blake. Because I think DiCaprio could pull off the right kind of evil.
Yeah, I think they have to lose the good versus evil, unless it's Rick Moranis and Bill Pullman.
Well, yeah. And Chiwetel Ejiofor could go a little darker with Styles.
Yeah.
And DiCaprio wouldn't be the tough guy, he'd be the smooth evil mastermind.
Yeah, 'cause I think just that whole he's a good politician, a good, or he doesn't even want to be a politician kind of thing they had. He's too good for it, was just, it was just insane.
Or, go back in time and cast Andy Griffith, because that's basically who the character was.
Ah, you're right.
From the Andy Griffith Show, actually in Matlock a little bit.
The original guy that did this, because there was somebody that wrote this script first, And then they said on IMDb that
Lost
he
interest, yeah, I saw
lost
that.
interest, his own fucking script, and he lost interest in it.
Yeah.
What the f doesn't that say a lot?
It kind of suggests that maybe it shouldn't be done.
But he wanted Kurt Russell.
Which could have been interesting, yeah.
Oh, could have been, yeah.
This was would have been not long after the thing. Underbrains.
On the brains.
This one is straight down the middle for me. There's some good, there's some bad. It's generally very, very meh. I'm going 2.5.
It's not close enough down the middle. There's still just too many awful, horrible things in this. But it had some moments that I didn't see the first time around or remember the first time around. And Lithgow, his performance is still enjoyable and parts of it. So I'm giving it a 2.
All right, and what have we learned?
We learned that I think the worst thing in the film by far, Lithgow's dye job.
Yes.
It was this weird brownish reddish thing. What the fuck?
And I learned that the early 90s were a very strange time. I mean, I lived through them and I still didn't realize just how strange they were at the time.
Oh yeah.
All right, so until next week when we'll be reviewing I Declare War, a much, much better film. Go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course the episode itself, which you're already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, and YouTube, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes, we'd really appreciate it. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. Don't quite remember what number or movie it's up to at the moment. The request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. We'll get to it eventually. And of course, the recommendations list. This never
Never had a
had a
chance.
chance. Which is surprising, because it's Lithgow and Washington and, the guy who did Highlander.
I would say it's two brains above what I had given it 23 years ago.
I maybe would have given it a 3 walking out of the theater back then. If my criteria were the same. So it went down a little bit for me, went up a little bit for you. You can also email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZT01, or for the alphanumeric
You
click
can fuck
challenge,
yourself.
414-368-9861. At least you didn't say it over the number. First, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee, and until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there
There
you
you are.
What do I gotta do to shut you up?
James
You cut out. Hello.
plan.
So, kick that again. You cut out a picture of the James.
Okay.